the boomers had a term, you know, Patty Mills' term, gold vibes only. Everything you do has to be at a standard that, in obviously with the Olympics, the top standard would be a gold medal. So it applies to everything you do, how you go about training, how you go about your interaction with each other, how you go about the weight room, how you go about treating your teammates, and putting behaviors in place that are of that standard.
Welcome to Slapping Glass, where we explore basketball's best ideas, strategies, and coaches from around the world. Today, we're excited to welcome the head coach of the NBL's Illawarra Hawks and the bronze medal winning Australia men's national team in the 2020 Olympics, Brian Gorgian. Coach Gorgian is here today to discuss building trust and gaining buy-in, aggressive pick and roll coverages, transition defensive concepts, and we talk pistol action, drag screens, and cracking some beers in an always fun version of start, sub, or sit. As we turn to the new year, we're excited to continue growing and building Slapping Glass Plus. Find out more about why current members from over 20 countries are calling SG Plus the best platform to connect, grow, and explore the craft of coaching. Visit slappingglass.com for more information. We hope to see you there. And now, please enjoy our conversation with Coach Brian Gorgian. Coach, thanks so much for making the time for us today. We're really excited to talk to you.
No, me too. Heard a lot about your program. You're worldwide.
Thank you, Coach.
Thank you. We appreciate that. And we're excited to talk to you about a lot of different stuff today. We were talking a little bit before we started and got on today about culture and what that really means and what that really looks like throughout the course of a season. And you're someone that's had a lot of success, been to the semifinals or the finals of the NBL for, I think it's 21 straight years. And obviously, it's very difficult to do. And from your standpoint of how a team can incrementally get better as the season goes on, culturally, in the locker room, you know, as a team?
It's a great question. And if I go back in my career, when I got involved in coaching, I was told by a close friend, Mike Dunlap, when you go to Australia, and I was playing and I was going back to America to learn to come back to Australia and start my coaching, go and find a sport that they're great at and be around people that are competent and know what they're doing and learn. And I went to the best sport in our country is Australian rules football. When I walked in there, the two things that I got out of that sport applicable in advance to basketball was culture and was conditioning. And coming from the States and being a part of college basketball team, you always had that kind of when I assessed it, when I was finished, it was like you made friends, but if you didn't, you know, if it wasn't perfect or you didn't get along, just bring your bag and do your job. And I've read and heard so much terms along that way as far as the NBA goes, or, you know, I remember reading a story on the Yankees and Steinberg, you know, just bring your bag, do your job. If you get along, that's great. And I went to the Australian rules football and it was so strong. If there's the one you said, what was number one, it would be empowerment. I just think that I look at the Boomers team and everybody, you know, talked about that. It was pretty visual. The strength of the culture, you know, so having a leadership group, having a culture that is put in by the players and administered by the players. And it's something that you look over and is driven by them. And that was a huge part of the Boomers, has been a huge part about what we do. Then, you know, the Boomers had a term, it's what we started with, it's setting standards, you know, standards. You know, Patty Mills' term, gold vibes only. It's something that I've used with my clubs is, you know, everything you do has to be at a standard that, in obviously with the Olympics, the top standard would be a gold medal. So it applies to everything you do, how you go about training, how you go about your interaction with each other, how you go about the weight room, how you go about treating your teammates, and, you know, putting behaviors in place that are of that standard, and then having those evaluated and monitored and progressed on a regular basis by the leadership group. I just find being over here, it's so much more powerful. I mean, we had a conversation today that there's a couple issues going on with some of the new guys that have come in from overseas and the level in which they're going at it on a day-to-day. And having that message delivered to those guys by three or four of the players, as opposed to me coming in and saying, oh, you're not training hard enough, you need to work harder at your game. But having your teammates come in and say, hey, we demand this on a day-to-day, you're seeing it. And right now, if we, you know, put this standard from 1 to 10, you're number 10 in the group. And, you know, that's not where you should be. When you have a team that can do that, and when you say the progression over how deep and how far you can go in that vein, and that's not held personal. So can I come to you and say, hey, you're training like a horse's behind and you're not giving me 100%. We're disappointed in you. In the off season, you drink too much and, you know, you always come back out of shape and we're tired of it. And now you're going to go home and come back the next day and you're okay with me. And when you say, how do things progress? You can only work in little increments and build that so you can bare your soul to somebody and they're not going to take that personal. Again, when you talked, I'm at the embryonic stage right now. I'm in my second year with the Hawks. When I was with the national team, I was with them. I had a very unique experience. I was with them in Beijing in 2006, 2008, whatever it was. And then 13, 12 years later,
yeah,
I was a part of putting that culture in and walking through the door in our drop-in center in Huntington Beach and seeing where that culture had gone. And that's Patty Mills and Joe Ingles and that leadership group going to the point that we're talking to now, where they could say whatever they wanted to say to a player and it was taken note of.
Coach, I'd like to follow up. You said with your current team now and you're in the embryonic stage, what does that look like? Or how does, when the trust maybe is a little fragile, or maybe new team, new guys aren't used to the culture, and to go to a guy and tell him like, hey, you're not working hard enough at the early stages, I guess, what are you doing? What are the processes to build that trust and to get that empowerment so players can be self-critical or, you know, talk to their teammates and still then, like you said, show up the next day?
Good question. It starts with, a lot of times as a coach, you've talked about confidence. You know, you don't give the guy confidence. I get that all the time. You know, I'm missing my shots. It's not hiding under the table, and it's not something I give you. This is all about the discipline of the doing. And that gives you confidence. That gives you culture. So right now, when you start it, it's about the day-to-day and how you go about your business. And when you walk in that door, I always say to the team, we're in our second year. When somebody walks through that door, they should see what this is and know what this is. And there's nothing that needs to be said. And as that matures and moves along, you're not swinging from afar, talking to somebody with no background. Mm-hmm. So they're in this thing for a week. They're in this thing for 2 weeks. And you sit down and say, what do you see? We go pretty hard. You're pretty direct. You know, whatever that is, it's increments, like I say. And then the players start meeting and, you know, we have, let's say, five things that are important this week, and then talk about each player and how they're doing it, and then communicate that to the new guys and just gradually, you know, assess and evolve. And this point I'm making is too, is after the first year is the hardest. And then the second year, now when we got in this year, your culture becomes visual. And right now, you know, in this little basketball window, we already in the second year, a certain style of player is not attracted to this team. I think if you're good, you're not for everybody. If, you know, there's certain guys in the league, they're making a certain salary, they're at a certain age, they don't want a part of this. And then there's other guys that are at a certain stage of their career, and they're saying, this is what I need for me to get to where I need to go. The winning is in the picking. The guys that I'm bringing in from overseas, you paint a picture, but as they come in, you know, you want an environment here now in the second year where there's no surprises. They walk in the door, you've given them a brief, you've told them what it's going to be. And then when they walk in there, it's evaluation. And I think if you said to the guys coming in, they would have been surprised by the voices of the players. An example being starting practice and, you know, they walk in and all say, out of bounds underneath the basket, pick the picker. We're playing to three, you know, Bandy, you've got it. Okay. The second team, you know, I want a double away from the ball. I want a one man taking the ball out of bounds. That's your deal. Okay. Now on the pick to the picker, I want it on a split court. You know, you guys take it. So right away, they're in an environment where the players are teaching them. They're asking questions of the players. And then at the end of the week, like I said, they'll, you know, sit down, discuss how practice was, how practice went, and then get them used to the fact that they have a voice,
yeah,
that the player is an important aspect of this. And like I said, it's all the goals, the values of the team, and they've been different for different teams, but they've all been agreed upon by the players and the coaching staff.
Yeah.
It's hard to go A, B, C, but, you know, like anyone that walks in here, they'll always say, man, your culture is really strong. And I think to myself, it's strong because what you're seeing is a little bit different because there's so much coming from the players.
Coach, a lot of great stuff in there. One of the words you brought up, and I think it's interesting when you start talking about culture, is directness. And you said, talk me about being direct with stuff and also maybe some conflict and how a great culture can have players and coaches that are direct with one another when it comes to standards and it comes to maybe things that they're not holding their end of the bargain, and how you viewed players and coaches being able to be direct with one another about maybe things that aren't going well and not have it always just be really nice, everybody's nice to each other, but have an environment where there's conflict, directness, and things are getting done and growing in the right direction.
The question that was asked before, that's really a sign of good culture.
Uh-huh.
And when you can tell, you know, and this is because, again, the coach is one aspect, but I always say to the players, you can't do it right away. But when you can tell somebody the truth and how you feel from the heart, when it's negative and there's not going to be any residue, there's not going to be any layover, your culture is pretty strong. And that, you can't do that. You can't get a team together and practice for a week and sit a bunch of guys in a room and put a guy in a chair and say, okay, here's our 10 values. Let's talk about how Bill's doing. And then you give him like 8 down to the core, nasty bits of information.
Right.
And that guy walks out of the room. He's good to go. It takes a long period of time to work through. What I found with the national team, this culture, like I said, was unbelievably strong. That aspect that you're talking about took me back. You know, when I Zoomed with Patty and Joe and Bogut and Deli and Baines, it was like questions to the core. What's next? What are we going to do here? They wanted answers and they wanted facts. I'm going to tell you the truth. I'm dealing with this. I haven't done the NBA thing. So you've got 7 or 8 NBA players, and how the NBA operates and how we operate is completely different. So a lot of work on my part on, well, how do you handle a video session? Because I'm blunt as shit. You know, hey, you know, you're not in this stance, man. You're touching your man off the ball. Get your ass on the split line. I've told you, Tim, and hey, coach, you can't talk like that in this deal. You know, you're going to have to temper this, and you're dealing with a different beast. And one of the things that was real interesting right away that came from Patty and Joe, hey, man, we want the truth and we want you telling me what you're thinking. We don't want any surprises. You know, tell it how it is. And, you know, video session or whatever, no BS. And we don't have any time for anything. And they wanted the outline of what we were running, what the schemes were defensively, and what the day-to-day was going to be. Let's go there. And what I wanted from them. I had many a time, I got to say this, and as we take this thing further, is that thing was so strong, and I'm coming in. They've done 12 years of work, and I'm coming in for a month, coming into this thing. You know, I had to listen a lot. I had to bite my tongue a lot. When we discuss things, they've been around the best coaches in the world. hey, coach, we've tried this and we did this. Don't like it.
Yeah.
No. And, well, what do you got? We'd have discussions like that. And I'd say many, many, many a time, you got it. You're committed to that. We're going there. All right. But I always had final say. And there, I'll give you an example. One was the on-ball defense. Man, you guys were, I didn't like it. I've watched you play for 12 years. I'm not doing it that way. We're not doing it that way. We'll discuss it later. We're doing it like this. Man, they were, got it, coach. My deal on that is, listen, you can't be my way or the high. I'm not, you know, I know I'm older and all that. I listen. Once you've got that interaction with your players and you've discussed it and you've made that point, then I think you're fine to go there. And I felt totally comfortable on that floor to be me with those NBA guys because we had an agreement on, hey, we want you to tell us the truth. And I didn't want a baseline drive. We've got 4 days of practice and a baseline drive and the low guy from the eye come across and then a discussion on who leaves or do you stay and trap it. I watched practices and I've seen practice and discussions, you know, discussion on this. This guy has this opinion. This has this. No, hey, it's like this. And now I felt free to come in and say, no, Joe. You know, no, you ain't doing it like that. You know, you need to greet him outside the lane. You're staying, the container's leaving. You got it? That would be considered harsh if there was no background to what we're talking about. So I wanted an environment and I wanted an environment that I can be me and that I can coach. And I'm not he might be offended by this or this may bother him or no, you can't do that. That you're comfortable and you're a free spirit to be you with your team.
Coach, I think it's worth going back within all this. We don't want to miss the point that you brought up about when it came to culture and the Boomers, the pick and roll defense and the off-ball defense and bringing that element and sort of the changes and things that you wanted to implement with this team. And so I guess we'll throw it back to you there on the things when you came in to this short window, what you wanted to change and what you wanted to think about from the pick and roll side.
Of all my time I've been in sport, the most daunting thing that I've ever been involved in was this Boomers job because I thought that they'd done unbelievably well, incredibly well. And I thought they had a reputation of being tremendous in the half court. They ran tremendous offense. So just giving you some background on how I answering your question, there's a mindset to this of I'm coming in. And the situation was that I coached Patty and Joe and a few of those guys. And now Brett Brown's not doing it anymore. Lamontis is gone. There's a month left. They've given 12 years work. They needed somebody that they know. And I was the only person that fit that. We had some Zooms and I got over the line that, you know, these guys were with me. And it's something that they wanted and they were going to support. So when I looked at it, I had 4 days. We had a drop-in center, which was amazing. And that's the whole culture thing. I just watched and learned a lot about them over a five-day period. And then I knew I had 4 days of practice and 3 games. So clarity, simplistic, as far as the basketball went. So 6 new players, they were great in the half court. And they ran flow, 5-out spread, complicated. And I've got to toss that out the window. That's got to go. Defensively, they were contest and contain. Pack it, flood the key, drops on all the on balls, sit. I'll be honest, I thought, what aren't they good at? What did they need work at? I thought they were less than ordinary on defensive transition. I thought getting back defensively, watching their games, the close losses in the games, I thought, man, they were poor getting back. And so, you know, talk to the staff. Here's where we can make a difference. We can make a difference on defensive transition, get back and make them play the second part of the clock or the scout, the third part of the clock. Too many shots are coming up in that first 8 seconds because they're on their heels getting back. Second aspect was their on-ball schemes. Everything was soft. Their handoffs, everything was a drop. And we had, you know, and I think this is, you know, do you select the team? Do you have a style of play and bring a team into your style of play? Or do you get players, have players make the play around them? And internationally, there's not a question on that. Club basketball may be different. Internationally, what do I got here? What can I do? And all of a sudden, there's no Bogut. You got Jock Landale. You got Nick Kay. We're playing small ball. Joe Ingles coming in the four and was a backup there. And, you know, offensively, obviously spreading the court. And then you're adding Matisse Thybulle and you're adding Dante Exum. And I'm going, man, we're going to come after those on balls. We are going to double lap stuff, go after side pick and roll, go after no icing, no, we're going to go after it. And the rule was basically is that we did it like traffic lights, red, yellow, green. Our rule was red or yellow. We never greened. We never green. Green was a drop. So we went red or yellow.
Okay.
And then our alternative, when you said, what's your counter to anything? And I go to where it was most applicable was when we're playing for the medal is switching. So red or yellow. Now red would be, and the god of this thing is stopping the ball at the line of the screen. So, you know, you can't get dragged. You can't, you know, no, when the big's got to have his chest out there, if the guy slips, I don't care where that guy goes, you have to stop the ball at the line of the screen. And now when you're running a red, you're staying in that until the ball is released, you know, until it's passed out of there. And where it was different was the guys off the ball. Obviously, when you hear the screen called, you know, I'd say everybody take it, you know, the guys off the ball take a huge step to the ball. Let's say you're in a shake, a side pick and roll with the corners filled and a guy sitting in the NBA alley and he's coming over the top. We would double the guy one pass away. Was always denying that pass. And the catch guy was the guy furthest removed, which was the guy in the dead corner. Mm-hmm. So once that ball came, now Europeans and a lot of the European teams, they come off that and they see a show. They want to whip that ball to the guy in that NBA alley. And now all hell breaks loose. So the thought process is stop the ball at the line of the ball. And make that guy hook that ball to the corners. And when he hooked that ball to the corners, Matisse Thybulle, Dante Exum, Nick Kay, you're traveling on flight time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're in that catch position and you're not moving to it because if you're moving to it, you can't get back. You're there early on the flight time of the ball, you're gone. If you take that, again, the lessons learned, and again, from the national team to normal coaching, clarity, simplicity. So let's go to horns. Now you're playing horns and you're running. You got the two guys in the corner. The guy comes off the on ball. Now you trap it. The guy that's one pass away, the other big is denying that pass. The guy in the corner is catching at the tip of the rim. He's sitting down there catching. And he's got to hook the ball to the corner. So if you take middle pick and roll four out, you take side pick and roll, you take step up, that's how we defended it. And so I thought it was unique and unusual to the competition. Most of the teams were in drops, toes to heels and backpedal, or just in a drop, you know, ride that guy over, play in the back window, pack it, and we don't rotate. We won every game that we play, except for Team USA. And the Team USA game, defensively, we had nothing for Durant.
Right.
Lessons learned on my part. They moved the ball, opened up a side for him. It wasn't pick and roll. So when Luka or these guys that we were playing from Argentina, that a lot on ball. You're dealing with the guard off the on ball, and that's how they get things going. With Team USA, it was move the ball. Get the ball to Durant when you needed to run something at him and rotate. And we didn't have that in our package. But the on-ball scheme situation, like I said, if you go back and look at that game against Slovenia or look at the games that we played, it was very effective. And coming down, I'll take you to the finishes, is when we're playing for that medal. We come out and we run that. We have him under control. Have Luka under control. We've got a lead. We're doing pretty well with it. And then he starts drawing it back and hitting the pocket bounce pass to the guy at the foul line. And they had a duck in guy under the net and started to open up a little bit for him. So, you know, we went back to man and started switching it and have a high hand on him. And that did well for a while. And then he got going. And so we went back to the double again.
Yeah.
So taking you two, we go to a 14-point lead and it's late in the game. And we've gotten that lead by switching and just keeping a high hand on him, packing it. And now he's moving the ball. We've got him under control. The rollout, we're good. They start running pick and roll and we switch. This is now with about 6 minutes to go. And he goes, bang, three. You know, comes down again, bang, three. And my assistant, who's the assistant coach with the San Antonio Spurs, said, hey, coach, you know, you ain't been in this. This is his time. This is God. This is what he does. He's going to burn us down, you know. And I turned and looked at him, and I'm looking at Luca, and I'm thinking, you know, no timeout, anything. I just look, you know, hey, Reds. And it was the next time down the court, he came down. And we trapped that thing and he tried to split it and Nick got a hand on it and it went to Exum and he went down the floor and dunked it. They stayed in the game. I had taken that away, but we opened it up at the end. And that was really when we went to that and did that the last 4 minutes, that kind of Lucas stopped. That was it. So that scheme was instrumental.
Coach, with that red scheme, hearing you talk and you mentioned a little bit with the slips or with slips or with flipping the screen, how would it change the trap? Or are you saying just go and trap and kind of at a certain point, you don't worry about the screen?
So you're, again, you guys, obviously. So what is great is the flip is irrelevant. Let's say it's middle pick and roll and that guy's coming up with his butt to the basket and I'm weak. You know, I got that guy on his right hand and I'm pushing him to his right. Let's say if he wants to go left, I'm pushing him to the right. Now this guy's coming and we're going to trap it with him going to the right. Now he flips it and puts it to it. Doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. You know, he's still going. He can't go that way. I'm pushing him to the trap. So relevant. And the slip outs or the ghosts or whatever, I always say, pretend it's Luca. So when we're in Reds, I don't care where that guy goes. We want to stop the ball and he rolls out of there. We're in our rotation. So if you're in a stack or the Spain thing and the guy's sitting at the foul line, we trap it. The guy steps out on the foul line. He's space guarded. You're catching from the furthest guy removed from the corner on the rollout. Mm-hmm. So flips, ghosts, slips. And coach, I say this to you, and I'm strong on this. There are ways, and there is with everything, but when I was going into this, and I wanted to give you some background, I think is important is coaching is you got 4 days of practice. The team was the best team in the competition, I think, internationally in the half court basketball. And where can you make a difference? And you've got 4 days. It's got to be clear. There can't be horns. We're doing this. If he comes off the floor, we're doing this.
No.
When they ghost, now we go to this on couldn't do it. So it's like, okay, what can we do that's aggressive?
Sure.
And it played because it's different. You got to think of the Australian teams. And I don't know if you know the background, you know, there's been a lot of thick legged, strong, you know, guys.
Yeah.
Luke Bradkey, Blahov, Longley, Gaze, Heel, Bogut, Baines, Delt. You know, I had some speed, some length. I'm not saying so as for the coaches out when I went to China, I had to find something that this team's supposed to. What can I do to make an impact that's going to help this team from what it's been? When I went to China, they had no idea, zero on defensive transition. So we went back every time into a one sprint back. Guards have the middle of the floor, 4-man left, 3-man right, 5-man on the net. They got zone. So we were in a 1-1-3, then second pass were man. Third pass. So that's how I taught defensive transition. And we started trapping the corners. So I got and I stayed in China by coming up with something. So everyone asked me about the offense and what you did on the offense. Man, what Lamontis ran was incredible. When I watched what they did on a three side and was, you know, looping a guy up and getting into horns, two back cuts and a pin down. You know, I mean, he was so far down the track, it was intimidating. I had to find solace someplace in my heart that I could feel like, you know, I'm coming to the floor and I'm bringing them something. And these guys know what they're doing. It's interesting. On the pick and roll defense in general, whatever it was, they definitely wanted clarity. And I don't know if it's NBA or what. And I know I've learned that from my team here. Man, when you start thinking about it, I got a lot of shit going on here.
Yeah.
You know, like right. On this, you this. Oh, he's slower. You know, ice this one. And, you know, having that clarity. Hey, man, you bigs on handoffs, you got to stab at the ball. You're never, ever dropped. You're heating up the ball or you're doing the wrong thing. On balls, you're out there. I don't want to see your ass buried underneath. You know, help right, help right. You know, so it was a philosophy and it dug into the culture.
Hey, coaches, we'd like to take a quick break to tell you about today's sponsor, Instat. They have been hands down the biggest resource we've used in generating our content. Their expansive database of over 30,000 players and 7,000 teams gives us the access we need to scout, notice trends, and learn from some of the best coaches in the game today. So join coaches of all levels who are using Instat to better prepare for their opponents, self-scout, and develop their players. By going to instatsport.com/form and entering the promo code SGPOD, coaches can receive one free month of Instat Scout and 10% off their subscription. That's SGPOD at instatsport.com/form. Thanks again to Instat for their support, and now back to our conversation.
Coach, the pick and roll stuff was one area that you mentioned about, you know, where you could bring something to this team. The other thing you've mentioned a couple of times is the transition defense as well. How much of the transition defense that you were trying to implement in a short amount of time was an effort thing versus sort of a tactical change as to how they got back and how they matched up in transition?
Of the stuff that I did with, and it was so neat to walk in and have seven NBA guys or six NBA, you know, and two things that internationally that are different than the NBA. You got the 40-minute game and the 48-minute game. I just thought in general, they're looser with the ball than, you know, there's another possession.
Yeah.
I'm strung different, you know, and I'm used to a 40-minute game and the international game's a 40-minute game and the ball, it's not like that. So the importance of the ball, if you said to me, like, in so if we got into the offense, that was a big key. And the other thing that just, I was taken back by their basketball IQs, how opinionated, how strong, and how smart. And, you know, I learned a lot from them. But in general, if you said to me, what was the thing that they had the least feel for? It was D-trans.
Yeah.
You know, and it started with, and you say, you know, what was your philosophy or what? Well, the number one thing when a shot goes up on airtime, get to floor spots, you know, when it,
yeah.
And constantly, you know, you have in today's game and with what we were running, you don't have anyone around the net. So guards are getting their feet in the paint and they're kicking the guys in the corner and runouts are, you know, that guy in the corner shoots it. I'm the point guard. I flick the ball to him. I'm looking and I'm going, the other guy on the other wing is coming over the top to rebound. You're looking, you go, God, four guys are below the foul line. And when I watched them, it was apparent leading into this and other deals. So video, making sure that when a shot went up, getting those guards out of the corner on flight time of the ball and having a later pickup and getting those guys behind the line of the ball and not being concerned about matchups. So was I reinventing the wheel? No, but they were not in tune in that.
Yeah.
In strength, I've got Durant. They would go, no, man, shot goes up. There's a fire on. You're back. You put out till a center gets there. Now you're telling the wing, You know, does he have the weak side or is he ball side? And then you come up and stop the ball, put the fire out. And we worked, whether it's 5-on-5, drop the ball, new ball coming in from the coach on the side, underneath the basket, 5 in the line, go touch the line, stop the ball, load up on the ball side. The guy coming in is always coming in on the weak side. And that gets them in the philosophy of they don't have a man. If I'm a guard and Green's got the ball off the backboard for Team USA and he's carrying it, Patty, that's yours. And that concept, those concepts, coach, is I'm not reinventing the wheel. But I'll tell you what, when you watch basketball, the teams that are bad there and the teams that aren't, you're not going anywhere. You're not going to get a medal. I worked on that. My game plan, I worked on defensive transition. If we had an hour, we touch it every day. Mm-hmm. And we touch side pick and roll every day. We touch middle pick and roll every day. We touch horns every day. Even if it was guard the coaches.
Yeah.
You know, I don't care. You know, warm up. It's the kind of thing that erodes. Those three things were really, really big. And if you look at us over the course of the tournament, that was a real strength, I thought, from the teams in the past.
Coach, one follow up for you on the defensive transition topic. You mentioned it earlier that I found really interesting is the 1-1-3 transition defense you implemented in China. It's very unique. I've never heard it. Could you just kind of elaborate more on just the rules and how then matching up on the second pass, how that worked?
See, in China, and I'm finding this now in the game that's being played today is unlike, I know I'm old, but I mean, even 10 years ago, whatever, if the one man, twos and threes fly the lane, 5 to the front of the rim, 4 behind the ball, one man seeks sideline, get your ass, big long front pivot, dribble a ball, try to get a piece of the center. So blah, blah. Now it's, you know, you're looking in, I think 5 out, multiple ball carriers. Like, you know, whoever gets that ball off the backboard, they're going, trying to get their chin on the rim. If they don't get their chin on the rim, you're into a dribble handoff. And now offense flows. Well, defensively, if you're in a 1-1-3, the guards are going back and the shot goes up. They're in the middle of the floor. And one's protecting the net. The pickup point can be wherever you want it. If it's on a missed shot, let's say I'm at half court. And now the 5's running right to the front of the rim. The 4's running the left. The 3's running the right. So it's the ball, who's ever carrying it, because you're in that, the guard has the ball. Mm-hmm. Now, his next pass, whatever he does, the guard's got the ball. So on this, everyone here is, or in China, Marbury get the ball, you know, dribble to that seam, then flip it to the guy behind him. And now he's dribbling downhill. Well, the guards switch that. Yeah. And the guards have it. And now when the ball goes to the 45, your forwards up, sideline pin, you're sitting on the elbows. My Chinese would face guard off the ball, buddy run back. That's not happening anymore. You're not coaching it anymore. Everyone, you're in your zone position. So you're looking, you're going, oh shit, they're walled up. They don't know they're walled up, but they're walled up. Post is on the other side of the lane. The 3-man's on the lane line. And from that point, you can do whatever you want. Now, the other thing on missed shots in China, the two imports play middle pick and roll, and the Chinese sit in the car park. You know, 3 over here on the side, 3 on the baseline, 3 over. Well, now you're running a 1-1-3. They come up. You know, Morris sets a middle pick and roll on the fly. The two guards switch, the big rolls to the front of the rim. There's your big catching it. And I'm thinking, I've hit pay dirt here. This suits this competition. Then we started okay on the second side. Now you get a ball swing and it's reversed real quick. Now, as soon as that ball hits the second side of the floor, we're in man. Uh-huh. All right. As soon as the ball hits the second side of the floor, we're trapping it, rotating it, and we're in man. Let me just say, when I went to China, it was hard as a foreign coach back then when I started to last more than a week. You lose 2 games, you're gone. Uh-huh. I took a bottom side. We won our first 10. We went 10-0. And that got me through the front door. It wasn't offense. It wasn't a play I came in. It wasn't flex. It wasn't middle pick and roll. It wasn't Princeton. It was a scheme defensively that had this team scratching their heads and they were all talking about it. Like on the national team coming in, some desperate, same sort of thing. Where can I make a difference? Where can you do something here? Same sort of thing. Get good at defensive transition and have something that these guys bite on defensively. The guys, the Chinese guys, absolutely had a confidence about them that the other team was confused.
Coach, we want to transition now into a really fun segment that we play here with every coach on the podcast called Start, Sub, or Sit.
You're too smart for me. Well, I need a sub. Yeah. Get somebody that knows what he's doing in here.
I think you're more than qualified for this game, Coach. So we'll give you three different topics around a theme and ask you just to start one, sub one, and sit one. And then we'll just have a fun little discussion from there. So this first theme for you, Coach, is hard to guard. And these are three different types of offensive actions that are difficult to guard defensively. So your start will be the one you think is the most difficult to guard. So start, sub, or sit, screen the screener action, pistol action, or veer screen action, where you're slipping out of an on ball into a pin down screen.
I'd say pistol. To me, honestly, the screener was very much, we called it T, was huge in China. So I feel totally comfortable on that. You got an answer to that. The pistol action coming out of the Olympics, I thought was a monster to guard, was really tough to guard pistol and all the things that you could do out of it.
Coach, my follow-up, the veer screen, in this case, the sub, the veer screen's interesting because going back to the conversation about the pick and roll defense where maybe you're going to red something and double it, how would you think about guarding or how would you work through a situation where they ghost out into a pin down and sort of try to solve that problem from the defensive end?
You know, the one good thing about what I'm saying in that, the veer screen, the Spain action, or you called stack, the rules off the ball is you virtually, what the guy, the screener's doing on what we do. So it is the guy that's guarding the screener stays, and he doesn't care what the heck happens over there. And then all we're worried about is the low guy in the eye, the catch guy.
Uh-huh.
And so if they set a screen over there or whatever, we're zoning up. Again, everyone talks about the veer screen. They talk about on the pick and roll, the actions, like on shake actions, the back screen action in it, or the down screen, the veer screen, screening that guy. On my low eye guy, the guy that would have the guy that's the lowest, the corner guy would have the high man, and we're zoned up. So again,
okay,
everyone takes a giant step to the ball. They go down there. The guy that is furthest removed would have that guy coming off that, and the screener that's going down there, the guy that's in the low, would be the catch guy on that guy.
Okay.
I know it's easy to say, but the one thing that I say to you, the answer I always have to the on ball, if I'm playing this way, if I'm playing in the yellows that we've talked about, it is consistent and the answer is going to be the same. Now, if you said to me, they're in that and we're in a drop,
yeah,
or we're in that, now it's a different beast.
Absolutely.
But with the yellow action or the red action, the low eye guy's got the deepest guy. The guy that's in the corner on the ball side would have that fight through whether that guy's getting picked. I think the last thing that you got to remember on this is, and I probably haven't done it, and I have talked a lot, but I haven't given enough emphasis to, is those things like Spain, like a veer screen, the passer delivering that pass when you're in a high-handed double is like you're doubled and now a guy's setting a screen away in the corner to a guy in the corner. That's a hard, you know, our five guys out, hands up, the guard, ball, red. Now you're delivering the ball to a guy coming off a pick. It's a hard play. So
yeah,
the guard's got that, you know, we'd say you're zoned up over there. You've got it. The guy that's in the opposite corner is the catch guy. Fight it.
I love that, Coach, on the veer screen stuff. I like to actually go back to what you said about the pistol action being, you know, difficult and how you thought about guarding that three-man action on that side in the international game?
The pistol action we did, because I found it hard, is when a guard, like the ball's coming up hard, they would throw it to a guard.
Yeah.
And now the trailing big's coming in that, and he can hand it off. He can flare. He can hand it flare. He can not hand it and play off the on ball. He can hand it flare. That guy play off the on ball. It's an issue. So anything guard to guard, we switched.
Okay.
And when the third guy came into that, which was usually the four on the pistol action,
yep,
we switched it all. I'm just okay. saying internationally. So our alternative was switching. So if there was any guard to guard stuff, so there was that handoff action there, he'd hand it off. That was a switch. And then if the guard came over the top of the big, it was a switch. If the four flared, it was a switch. And we would always switch under and protect. We didn't want the rollouts. And the two guys opposite were in the high-low eye.
Okay.
I love cutting. And offensively, like I like cutting better than screening and tempo. And what I found with pistol internationally, it was usually done at tempo. You know, the guy's yeah. coming down, he's crossed the street, he's coming down hard. And all of a sudden, you know, Patty steps up, Joe whips the ball to Patty, Patty's moving towards the ball. Here comes the screen, that movement, that action at tempo. It's nice to sit here and say, oh, I switch, you know. It was a monster.
Yeah, it's tough.
And I find that action much more difficult than Veer or Spain, or I call it T, pick the pick. I find that one a tough one.
Okay.
And again, when you're domestic coaching, like I'm coaching now, everything that you're talking about, I think it's important as a coach to, I still do shell. Take six things that your league does, seven things that your league does, and make sure you touch that three times a week. Mm-hmm. So have a drill where, you know, you do 4-on-4 shell, you do side pick and roll, you do middle pick and roll. All right. You do pick the picker. All right. You do pistol. And one of the things in ours right now that's really big, you know, is UCLA. They reverse the ball, take it to the other side of the floor. UCLA, we have shooters. They bring off pin downs on the weak side and they get into side pick and rolls. So, you know, shell that every day, however you're going to guard it. And right now on the UCLA stuff, we're icing it in our thing. So anytime there's a UCLA, anytime there's an Iverson cut, we ice it. But my point to you is in your league, whatever your league is, our league now, those things I just discussed, and the big thing that, and I saw internationally, was multiple ball carriers, you know, multiple ball carriers in transition and a lot of five out. So that defensive transition theme, we're doing that right now with my team, the 1-1-3, back to different deals.
All right, Coach, our next one for you is now on the offensive side of the ball with the drag screen. The three things I'm going to give you, what would be the most important to its success, in your opinion, to successfully executing or running a drag screen? The timing, tempo, the location, or the angle of the screen? Start, sub, sit, what would be in the order of most important?
A drag screen to me is, and I think the thing that's all this talk that we've done about ball screens, the hardest ball screen. And I say, you know, I have Justinian Jessup, your hardest to guard. Post players, your hardest to guard when? Your hardest to guard on the push. There's no cover down if you're a post player, if you get the ball in tempo on the push.
Yeah.
If you know, your shot, you're hard to locate if you can get ahead of the ball. Now, on ball defense, all that we've talked about, yellowing is hard as shit to do
right.
when you're running a drag screen and you're coming in there at tempo. So to me, you know, when you say angle, when you say, if you're in the half court and you're running on ball and angle, timing, but if you're talking drag screen to me is you're doing that thing on the fly. Mm-hmm. It's with momentum and it's quick. And I think the number one thing on a screen now, the secondary part of it is that the big is, I think the separation is more important than the screen. So when you say screen, let's take right now when you watch, and I've been international basketball, the NBA, here comes the on ball. I'm a guard. I'm guarding you. I get up. When I hear the pick, I get up and I get into you, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to get up I'm going to close that space and I'm going to get up onto you. Now, let's say this screen's flying down the court and I get up and get into you now and crowd you. And now I'm pushing you as he crosses half court and starts heading towards the 3-point line. Now I'm going to start heading, you know, over, and I'm going to push this guy and try to get over the top of it. Correct?
Yeah.
All right. Think about this. You're guarding me and I've got the ball and I'm a good guard. Get the hell out of there.
Yeah.
I've got my driving lane. I've got this guy on my hip. I've got a driving lane to the rim. So Capella, back when I thought Hart, when they were at their, you know, that guy never set a screen. He took one step towards the screen. Harden's got that guy on his hip. And they do it. I think D'Antoni has different than everybody else, does it better than everybody else. He's forget this, you know, it's interesting. You go and I was at something and I don't want to say who it was, but a disciple and very, very smart on this subject matter. And I'm sitting there and this is what he's saying. Just he's saying, hey, man, forget everyone's saying 2-foot stop, your angle's here, get over his shoulder. You know,
yeah.
Two hands over your chin on your shoulder, you know, get out,
yeah.
You know, take 2 steps towards it. You see that guy change his angle on the dribbler, get out of there. So if you said to me on a drag screen situation, and that's what we're discussing here, I think that you want to take a run at, and as soon as you see that guy get to that, and he's got to do that, that you're out of there. You're either to the tip of the rim or you're gone. And now the guard's got his driving lane. If it was a stationary situation where he's coming up and he's doing it, then your angle coach, like you said, your butt crack's kind of pointed to the corner where that sideline. So your job as a big is you don't want that guy to go under.
Yeah.
So now I've walked the ball up the court. Now your job, a lot of times when you're running, let's say middle pick and roll, if you're butt crack is pointed to the sideline. Now that guy's going to go under or he can slip through. So the angle of the screen, like you said, is very important. Now I want to go and be in a position that he cannot go underneath the screen. And the guard wants to take that ball down and get and work opposite and get the ball below the line of the screen and now bring that thing over. And now once that guard is in that position of trying to fight and get on your hip and push it one way, I'm a big, I want to separate.
Coach, my follow-up is the location of the drag screen. Is there a preference of where you want it set? If the guy can get it at half court, I mean, the sooner the better, or do you want it to set where he's coming off in a scoring area?
2 scenarios. If it's 5-on-5, and I don't really call that a drag. When you ask me a drag screen, I want to say there's momentum there. If I'm walking that ball up the floor, now location is important. Mm-hmm. And I want to take that ball down and get it deep and walk that screen down and come off that thing just outside the 3-point line. And let's say I'm coming down on my left hand and bring it back. That's the hard part in a good guard is get the ball from one hand to the other. But when it's at its best, it's when the defense is not under control, not set, and you're coming. So I get an outlet. I'm on the sideline. My butt's towards the sideline. I look over my shoulder. I'm trying to get that outlet as deep as I possibly can. It's a front pivot, and it's a long dribble, and I'm trying to get a piece of the center circle so I'm not stuck on the sideline. Once I get into that alley and I'm moving, that big is coming in and he's laying it on me. That should be deep. And sometimes I call it a butt rub. I'm just dribbling right off that guy's butt.
Right.
And he's hooking and going to the front of the rim. I think that's hard to guard. And then the package with that, when we say to our five, if you're behind the ball, sprint and do just what I'm saying. And now if you're ahead of the ball, you want to come towards half court, high hands, we can throw it to you or you step up and crack that guy.
Yeah.
And we want that thing near. So you either got to step up or a drag screen on the run. We want those as deep as possible. And coach, the closer to it that again was asked, and you guys talked about the subject matter, that I thought was great was counters.
Yeah.
And a simple one for the national team was, okay, now we were playing NBA and Patty Mills had come off and Green would switch and Litter to take, you know, K down to the block, no advantage, strong as a bull, nothing there. Green is into Patty's grill, got a high hand, nothing there. And we're taking one dribble coming across half court. We haven't thrown a pass. We're spreading. We're playing one-on-one. They're 13 up at halftime. And you go, we're good. This is ridiculous. So the counter at halftime, no more on ball. Do the exact same thing, but pass it to the screen. And after the game was over, the comment, we came back and won that game. And the comment from, it wasn't about winning the game, but it was an eye opener leading into the tournament, was simplistic clarity again. And number two was that now it, all of a sudden they made a comment. They cut us. They cut us to pieces with their, and what happened was by doing that, now you became a cutting team. Mm-hmm. So now in the half court, we ended up with four or five passes before we got to the point. And that was a timeout and just the adjustment, no board, no anything. Step ups, shakes, no on ball, pass it.
Coach, just because you've mentioned it a couple times and the counters, and just quickly on that subject, your thoughts on in-game counters versus, say, a counter that you want to put in, you know, after practice or after a game, things that you look at on the fly, maybe say at halftime that you have in your package that then maybe you want to go to in a second half or one out of a game.
I think the big one, obviously, is on ball, you know, defensively and offensively. Okay, just what Coach and I have been talking about now, they're in drops or they're trapping everything. You know, so traps, they're in reds. You want this. They're in drops. You want this. And then defensively, the same. I always have something in my pot, you know, like what I've talked to you about. You know, I want to pump my, I always get excited with two guys like you and we start talking basketball. I could go, you can tell I could go all night. I'm all energetic and you're going to have to cut 2 hours of it to get out. But, you know, and your fist is pumped and you're in here going, we're trapping and, you know, the low guy's flying off there and you get to the game and everybody's, you know, you've been on the road, you get in there and they're running in mud.
Yeah.
And you go, this is BS, ain't happening. You know, what's your counter? And you got to have something that, you know, again, switching green, plugging, 1-1-3, I'll do that. I've always got a zone in my pocket on the defensive end. Hey, you come into games sometimes and you go, no. And then I said to you, my offensively, I do a lot of cutting before I get to C5, middle pick and roll, or a lot of cutting. Ball goes up, one man's to the front of the rim, five, four back cuts, two dribbles up, reverses to three, two cuts, three cuts. Now you're in shakes. So I'll do stuff like just, you know, like rim cut. Well, cutters. Now we come into a game and you look and you go, they don't have it tonight. They're running in mud. So you know, when you say counters to me, that, you know, specifically for they're defending this thing a certain way. Okay. So they're helping from here, put two guys on the same side, don't have corners filled. They're dropping on the on balls. All right. So now the screen is important and we want to pop and we want to dive the high guy in the alley and play with the corner guy. It's just have that terminology that they know. It's not a play on that. Okay. Drops this. We know coming into a game, hey, coach, they're yellowing, they're showing. Okay. Coach, they're in drops.
Sure.
Okay. So we're this, hey, we're not cutting tonight. We're not moving tonight. Straight C5. Cutters blues out, you know, okay, let's go. We want to stay away from on balls. Let's go the 1-1-3 and trap the corners. Mm-hmm. Now, sometimes when you go 1-1-3 is what I'm saying, they can make it. So they move the ball twice and they bring the five up and you're just guarding middle pick and roll again.
Yeah.
You know, so you're in a drop or you're in, okay, let's run the 1-1-3, but we want to stay away from the on balls. We don't want to fly around so much. So let's trap corners. Let's trap the 45. Those would be, Coach, my kind of changes or deals, general like that, as opposed to plays, this play, that play. I'm not overly a play guy.
Makes sense. Coach, a lot of great stuff in there. We got one more start, sub, sit for you before we move on to the last question. So this last one here is themed stats that matter, specifically when you're looking at a box score or stat sheet at halftime and you're going into halftime and you're looking at the stats of what matters to you most. So start, sub, or sit, these three types of attempts from the offensive side of the ball: free throw attempts, 3-point attempts, or 2-point field goal attempts.
For my team right now, it would be free throw, then 3-point, then getting to the line. Really important for my team right now, getting the other team in foul trouble. And 2-point ones, the other one, we want to spread the floor and get threes. But I think getting to the line of the three things that you said would be the one I'd look at the most.
Coach, with that, if your team's not getting to the line, let's say the amount that you want, then I guess, and then maybe tying back in the counters and things like that, what are the types of conversations at halftime you would have, whether it's running things a different way, whether it's just being more aggressive, getting to the rim to get those free throw attempts up?
Spacing and attacking, you know, like it used to be, we'd run something, you know, and again, how the game's changed. It's so funny that now you're getting the ball to a two side, you've got the three side, you got the high alley, and instead of just reversing the ball to the corner, get your shoulder down and let's start getting our feet in the paint and attacking the paint, as opposed to running a cross pick and rolling it into Bogut and saying, you know, let's get it in there. That's how I've coached most of my career. And now it's usually, you got to get deeper spacing. We got to get that ball from one side to the other side of the floor and attack the paint. A lot of times when we're not getting to the foul line, we're jacking shots on the first side of the floor, which is common in this game. You know, I think too, you got to be careful. Yeah, we want to get threes, but we don't want pressured threes on the first side of the floor. And it's amazing how often that's a problem. Just what you're asking there, it's a constant. The flip side of it, and the last one is the other one I always look at, is turnovers.
Yeah,
because now when you're getting the ball to the second and third side, are you turning that thing over? Because that's the next sin.
Coach, you know, we gave you three different things on the box score, but is there anything that is not on the box score that, let's say, you have someone on your staff keep track of that is really valuable to you and your team, whether, you know, deflections or something like that, more of a hustle stat?
I have a coach here and he's really helped. Right now, passes.
Okay.
It's not for everyone and it's not for every team I've coached. As I'm evolving into five out and change, you know, like I think as a coach, when I stop, I'm near 70. If I'm coaching like I was when I played, you know, forget it. You know, you've got to evolve.
Yeah.
And the game has changed tremendously in the last 5 years or in the last 4 years. And so now, to me, I'm cutting some sort of feedback that lets me know. And sometimes it can be play calls. We ran cutters 10 times in the first half. If I'm running C5, I'm not cutting. And cutting is important to me. And then passing. And it's funny. I mean, 2 years ago or whatever it was, this was, I mean, the Warriors. And I'm not saying we're the Warriors or what, but ball movement, if that's your God, if that's important to you, than passing as opposed to dribbling.
Yeah.
You know, when you talked about prior to this dribble penetration as an offense, then what I'm saying isn't as applicable as how we're trying to play now. I'm trying to cut. So if I'm trying to cut, I'm saying I don't want to dribble so much. And if I don't want to dribble so much, my offense is passing. So in ours, cuts, passes, and turnovers.
Yeah.
If you said three things that were applicable over the last 2 or 3 years that are numbers that we take in.
Coach, you're off the start, sub, or sit hot seat. So that's our last question for you. Thanks for playing that game with us. That was a lot of fun. We got one more question for you here as we close. But before we do, we really appreciate your time today. This has been a lot of fun for us. So thanks for being so thorough and going through all this stuff with us.
We're not done. We're going to crack a beer and... It's 7 here. I don't get to do this often. Let's rock and roll. If you're Huntington Beach, let's go. What I'm saying is it's been great. I've had a blast.
Thank you, Coach.
And you guys are everybody. It's funny because I'm been overseas for so, and I'm never in America. That Irvine one, I was thinking back, I was with Team China. I was in China for 12 years. Obviously, I didn't come back to Australia. I don't get to America hardly at all. And when I saw your name, you know, Fran, did one with Fran. They were, you know, fine, gorgeous, you got a friend, you know, like everyone high-fiving me. And, you know, we had a meeting today and we were talking. We had this game and we're doing some scouting stuff. And then we got into talking all this other. I looked at my watch and I go, oh, I got a podcast tonight with Dan Kerkorian, you know. And the guy turns and looks at me and he goes, slapping glass? And I go, yeah. He's a young guy. And then it's like, you know, kiss my ass, brother. I'm big time. I'm big time. I'm with the boys tonight. Let's go.
Well, Coach, thank you again. And we'll get you out of here on this question. You've had such a great career thus far. I know there's a lot ahead for you, but interested in what one of the best investments in your career as a coach has been.
I'm sure it's the same that anyone would tell you. I think the most important thing, you know, it's getting better at your craft. I was taught and I've been very, very fortunate to get, and I told you, I went across when I first got coaching, I went over and I saw my dad was the coach at Loyola, and I came in there and I go, Dad, I'm starting in this. Can you help me? And he looked at me and he goes, my ass is on fire. we're, you know, they were like 1-5. He's in the heater. He goes, I got a guy on my staff that's going to be all time. And he goes, hop in his pocket. So it was Mike Dunlap. And he took me under his wing for a week. And I told you about the Australian rules football story, but the basic deal was that I saw in him, one, was his thirst for knowledge. Pete Newell back in those days, Bud Presley, Johnny, you know, he just reading, constantly working at trying to get better. And he write to, hey, Gort, if you want to be good, go and get around the best. And what I've done my whole time in this is not be afraid. Go to the clinics. I was for Rick Majerus clinic, you know, just anywhere you can go to work at your craft and be around the best and get better. Try to get as competent and as learned. And funny, as I've gotten to this age, I know that's the time for me when it's over, when you don't have the energy or don't have the want to do that. And the last thing I'd say on that is, I'm different than you guys in most. Now I can reflect at close to 70 years old and look and go, man, you know, some of these guys that I've look what they've gone on and done. My first client, one of my closest friends, Leon Rose, look what he's done with his life. Look what Mike Dunlap has accomplished. Jamal Mosley played for me, was one of my first imports in my new team in. Again, being around the best, learning from the best, always trying to grow, always trying to get better, and also being surprised at who you can learn from. I learned so much from Joe Ingles and Patty Mills. And, you know, but they've been around unbelievable coaches. And so don't act like you know everything. Don't be too proud not to listen or take advice. So all that stuff to do with learning and growing and getting better at your craft. And anything that you look at and you go, God, he does that well, or he's good there. There's not one thing that's original. You know, it's all an influence from somebody that's a lot better than I am. It's seeking out the best and learning.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode with Coach Brian Gorgin. Please make sure to visit slappingglass.com for more information on the weekly newsletter, Slapping Glass Plus, and much, much more. Have a great week, coaching, and we'll see you next time on Slapping Glass.
Do we have a name yet for this thing? I have like slapping backboard.
Slapping glass.
Slapping glass. That's kind of funny.
I like that. That's good. Let's roll. Slapping glass.